Volker Türk stressed that international humanitarian law protects all detainees. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon. This is the Shai Rana Show with your host, Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Zain Al-Amin with the Shai Rana Show. And we have a lot to discuss today, as you might imagine. Among what we'll be discussing is, I guess we'll start with the fact that we had a national display of how our Congress is owned, or was owned by Netanyahu. We had both sides of the aisle basically standing, giving him about 52 standing ovations, which is more than Churchill even has gotten. And of course, that I know that there are some people that sat out this kind of love fest with the psychopath, but I know that they've met with him in private. Some of the people had met with him in private, including Harris and Biden. And of course, he also went and met with Trump. And obviously, what followed with his return shows you that he basically got didn't really meet much resistance for his plans to widen the war, in the sense that the acts that have been committed by the Israeli military since his return to Israel show that our government gave him the nod. And I want you to remember that the majority of Americans, about 62% of Americans from both, from both parties, if you want to call it that, had called for a ceasefire. What has been done recently, the murder and mayhem that has been created by Israel in the wake of this, literally puts an end to any negotiations of ceasefire, especially with the killing of the man who is the head of the political wing of Hamas, who was basically the point person for these ceasefire negotiations. So that's we'll talk about that more at length. But what I wanted to say is that there are two major things, at least, that were done. First of all, the Israeli government accused Hezbollah of bombing a soccer field where many children were killed, about a dozen or so children were killed, that these are Syrian children. These are not Israeli citizens. They've refused the citizenship. These are people that live in an area that's occupied, that is also majority Druze, that have refused an Israeli citizenship. Not only that, but when Netanyahu and his Monsters, Inc. of right-wing psychopaths came to visit, pretending that they are one with the Druze, the people there, and I say Druze, not Jews, the Druze, the Syrian Druze there, basically called them criminals and told them, don't come and dance on the graves of our children, and try to justify and to use this, which you're about to do, as an excuse to say that it wasn't us that did it. It wasn't this misfired dome rocket that did it, but it was actually Hezbollah. As if they do care about children. These are people, if you somehow hit your head and forgot what has happened in the past few months, is that these are people that have killed tens of thousands of children without blinking an eye. So what followed, obviously, were first an attack on Lebanon, bombing in Beirut, in Dahiyeh, in the southern suburbs of Beirut. And that was also like a signal for a widening of the war, so to speak. But that didn't happen. It was a limited strike. And now, of course, in retaliation, the Lebanese resistance has hit the northern front in Israel, which has been emptied of people, and set it afire. I mean, it was a huge fire that was set in response. But Israel wasn't satisfied with that, because they want to end the ceasefire talks. Netanyahu needs to continue the war. Netanyahu needs a regional war. You know, good people listening, by the time, as somebody had said, by the time Israel gets done, quote, defending itself, the whole world is going to be on fire. This is a country that is a cancer in the midst of our region. It's a country, it's a government that is has basically shred the social network of every country around it. And these are white European supremacists that are some of the biggest racists, some of the bloodthirsty psychopaths. And this is what our government, this is what your tax dollars are funding. This is why Jamal Bowman lost his election. This is why Cori Bush is losing in the polls right now, because this the strongest lobby right now is AIPAC, and it is supporting, it's pouring money into anybody that tries to stop this massacre, this genocide, in opposition of anybody that tries to stop it, the genocide. But not only that, as we've seen recently in the gathering of right-wing Christians, specifically evangelical Christians, that's the biggest entity. People think the majority of Zionists in the United States are actually Jewish. No, they're actually Christian, and specifically evangelical Christians. Not only that, but these church-going boomers that are praising Biden, or now celebrating Harris's stepping up, are completely detached from what's happening in the world, are completely complicit in genocide, as the ICJ ruling, the recent one ruling, they are accountable now. And that brings me to the universities. The universities right now, these administrations and boards at universities, we know what's happening in higher education. I myself have been a victim of that kind of McCarthyite inquisition. And that's happened in Georgetown University in the English department. I don't even teach politics there. In the English department of Georgetown University, where they basically canceled all my classes for the upcoming year. And didn't give a reason. The chair there, he basically wrote me an email without even a subject line, saying my classes had been canceled. And then when he was pushed by my union to give a reason, he said that he gave a bureaucratic excuse, which doesn't really address the fact that they not only did they stop me from teaching in the upcoming year, but the fact that this came in the wake of a doxing campaign by Zionists. Georgetown University, the English department, and specifically the chair, Daniel Shore, who was pressured by somebody from up above him to basically cancel my classes. And by the way, for the record, my enrollment was enough to run the classes at the beginning of summer, which meant that my classes would have been probably full. So I was already had enough students to basically teach. And I already have excellent, not very good, not just good, but excellent evaluations by my students who are now wondering and contacting me of why that these upcoming classes that they were excited about are not being offered. Obviously, these are the good Germans, the people like this chair, the good Germans that just pass on whatever is happening and obey. And they put a gag order on my directors, who are decent people, not to talk to me afterwards. That's not normal. Us adjuncts are always, we're very used to being told last minute that there's, for example, our classes are under enrolled, so you're not going to be able to teach now. But this is different. This is definitely a McCarthyite move. And it's being done by basically liberals, right? Liberals who have actually signed a ceasefire statement, a strong one, at Georgetown University. So that's in the best of conditions. That's what you should expect. But these people should expect resistance, because right now I'm about to declare war against that department and against that university for what it's doing, and expose them about what they've done. They have basically canceled all my classes for political reasons, and they're denying it that it's for political reasons. And they deny it that it has anything to do with like the doxing campaign that happened. We're not going to be quiet. The press is going to be contacted now. And this is going to be out in the open, out in the public. I don't think they know what they're messing with. I think that chairs like that at Georgetown University think that they can just brush away people. And they don't know. They just look at the adjuncts. By the way, the percentage of adjuncts has been increasing in every university, and their contracts, for if you don't know, are very flimsy. You can refer to the Metro Section article, the excellent one that was done a couple of years ago by Washington Post that featured me teaching at three different universities and still not earning, barely earning enough for my shelter and food. And these people think that they can brush us away, that they can shoo us away without consequences, and they don't even bother to look at who they're shooing away. You know, they don't bother to say, maybe this guy might be quite an influential person in his or her community or in their community. They don't think, maybe, you know, let's look at what they've done in the past. You know, let's look at the fact that the Boys and Girls Club in their community was fought over by a campaign designed by them. And it to this day, after a decade, it still serves 240, at-risk youth, both black and brown at-risk youth. They don't understand that maybe these people are the ones that were responsible for shutting down the Oak Hill Youth Detention Center because it was housing Washington, D.C. juveniles. There was a rate of recidivism of over 60% happening in that, and we exposed that. And they think we don't have the resources to fight them, but they don't know what they've just triggered. And I want to hear from other adjuncts that are suffering from this, because we have a union. And unfortunately, for those of you who are not familiar with higher education, the full-time professors that are being fired across the nation in this McCarthyite inquisition, and including, you know, those people don't have unions. It's adjuncts that have unions and staff that have unions, and they have the flimsiest of contracts, even though we've worked on strengthening them, and we've mobilized adjuncts to strengthen them. So that's what's happening in terms of higher education. And I'm going to play also a piece from the great Vietnamese author Viet Thanh Nguyen, who recently talked about how he's proud that he's being canceled because he's been freed to confront what's happening. Basically, these nonprofits like 992Y that held literary events and ran literary contests, and I had been submitting them to them as a poet and a writer, and I didn't realize that they were such reactionaries as to, you know, to kick out Viet Thanh Nguyen from an event that was supposed to happen last year just because of his stance on Palestine. Simply that 92Y's, you know, 92Y can never, as Saul Williams said, can never unring that bell, because it's after this, the dust settles on this genocide, and this McCarthyite period will end, and these people will be exposed, just like the people that participated, to whatever extent, you know, to whatever extent in this McCarthyite inquisition, like in the 50s. Now you can see the films, and you know, in these films and in these books about the McCarthy era in the 50s, you know, these people, these bloated bureaucrats, like the chair of the English department at Georgetown University's, they think that they saved their career by ending somebody else's career, but they will be judged by history. The problem is that we don't want to wait for history to judge them, but by that time, we would have been the people that are most, that are seeking justice, will be muzzled, and more Palestinians will be killed. But not that, just that, as we know, and as the author, the Pulitzer Prize winning author Viet Thanh Nguyen said, you know, that there will be consequences after the dust settles, and we can't be quiet. These are the people that are participating in these bureaucratic procedures to muzzle people that are talking out and speaking out and supporting the student encampments, will definitely be exposed. I have no doubt history tells us that. And they will be shown as the villains or as the meek bureaucrats that were just being quiet about the injustices and carrying it through to save their own careers. What we've discovered in general, that institutes of higher education around the world, and especially Ivy League schools, are willing to sacrifice enrollments of students, and are willing to, like the University of Minnesota is doing now, are willing to sacrifice faculty and students for the sake of saving their investments in the military industrial complex, for the sake of saving their what's happening right now in terms of the board members, the moneyed board members that are pushing for a Zionist agenda, that are pushing this McCarthyite agenda. And if they think that the students are going to be quiet about it, it's not going to happen. And one indication is, like, you could see the youth turnout in the recent demonstration we had in Washington, D.C., which was massive. that was confronting the visit by Netanyahu that happened, you know, that happened last week, you could see that actually the students have not been pushed down, but rather are actually angrier than ever and have even taken more radical stances now, especially when it comes to the police, because at the heart of our democracy, the biggest danger to our democracy is not what the Democratic Party is telling you, because the Democratic Party, what the Democratic Party is telling you is the biggest danger to our democracy is Trump. But they've created Trump. They've set the standards for Trump. So we've had this, again, I want to say my mantra again. We've had this idea of escalation, like, what, you know, we have Biden killing, and he's first and foremost above Netanyahu responsible for the death of the 187,000 Palestinians, including tens of thousands of children. He's the one that massacred them. And that sends the bottom line for the next, if Trump wins the election, that's the bottom line, meaning he has to outdo them. That's what's been happening in the savagery that's called our government. The savagery has been set by the Democratic Party and escalated to differentiate themselves from the Democratic Party. The Republicans have escalated it. So, you know, right now, the people who tell me to shut up about elections are actually liberal Democrats that are saying you have to shut up because, you know, Biden, in essence, they don't know what the implication is because they are racists. They have racist ideas, and they'll be shocked at finding this out. But they are racist in essence because they don't know what they're implying. They're implying that Biden has basically committed the right amount of genocide, as someone answered them one brilliantly. Said, "Oh, Biden has put the right, you know, committed the right amount of genocide, and Trump will exceed that." Meaning, you know, I remember confronting one of those liberal journalists that who said to me, "Oh, by this time, Biden has killed 30,000 Palestinians, but Trump will kill more," as if there's a number that's acceptable that allows me to vote for Biden or Harris. And that brings me to Harris, which are, it's pretty incredible, one of the most unpopular Democrats who is being used because, like, she's a totem of identity politics. She's a mixture of these races. And by the way, people, you know, the identity politics died. It died last year. It died last year when you had a situation. One is you had an Arab president, Arab American president of Columbia University, a total Zionist, a total reactionary, a total racist, a total right winger. Right, that called on to the police to beat the students at Columbia University and end their encampments. And when she was sat in front of the McCarthyite Congressional Committee for Higher Education, wasn't able to even define the most basic things for them because she didn't care about her students. She's willing to sacrifice those students. That's an Arab American that did that. You think we're still buying identity politics? Not just that, but who did she ask to do that? Who did she ask to beat, who did she request to beat the hell out of the Columbia University students that were taking on peaceful encampments, right? She asked a Latino police commissioner, head of police, to do that. So now you have an Arab American, a Latino, in solidarity. What did Martin Luther King call that? In brutal solidarity, against the students who are multiracial and defending the issue of Palestine, which is a litmus test now for global justice, which is the whole of the global South is on one side, and those kinds of reactionaries on the other side, this president and this commissioner. But who did he have to get the permission from and the resources from? A black mayor, you know? So we have a black mayor in New York in brutal solidarity with a Latino police commissioner, in solidarity with an Arab head of an Ivy League school, uniting against these students. So Ms. Harris' identity politics is dead. My liberal friends, identity politics is dead. And that's what you're using to justify the continuation of genocide, the continuation of this brutality. And I say this because Harris is not going to make a difference. She's married to a Zionist, and she's after the DC protests. If you don't believe me that she's not going to do anything, after the DC protests, she repeated some of the lies that the Zionist Hasbara has been spreading, the propaganda machine has been spreading, and said that these protests were anti-Semitic. And she pointed to also like one incident in this massive demonstration where there was a burning of a flag, which, by the way, it was done not by the demonstrators, not that I'm against the burning of flag, but that wasn't done by the demonstrators. It was done by an infiltrator into the demonstrations. I've been demonstrating here for 30 years, and I know the works of infiltrators. And when people tried, actually some demonstrators tried to stop him from burning the flag, they didn't. So she used that as a propaganda piece, which tells you this woman is not going to do anything. She's going to propagate this genocide. She's going to continue using the rhetoric that Biden said that I'm going to be hardline, and she's going to continue sending 500 or 2,000 ton bombs, 2,000 pound bombs to Israel to kill civilians, to kill children, to dismember babies, and so on. Lastly, I want to talk about who is Harris, who is Biden, who is Trump, who is these Democrats like Schumer and Pelosi, who are these Republicans siding with? They're siding with a nation where settlers besiege a military outpost in order to basically attack because the military, the IDF, by some miracle, finally woke up to the fact that Palestinian prisoners are being tormented, that are being tortured, that are being trigger warning, raped with objects, raped with fire extinguishers, as the contents of the fire extinguisher are dispensed inside them. I'll leave you with that image. Yeah. And they decided that suddenly, after months of this group of settlers and this group of the military that was holding these civilians without a trial in a prison that's been described as a concentration camp, they have been raping and torturing them for months, and suddenly the IDF wants to arrest nine of those that gang raped a Palestinian man to a degree that he was paralyzed. And with this, what happens, they go in to arrest these nine, and the settlers, the Israeli settlers, rise up to resist them. And then when these nine are taken to the courts, the settlers besiege that area, besiege the courts, besiege the prisons. There's huge riots to an extent that the military, the Israeli military, has to send soldiers from the Northern Front, from defending the Northern Front, meaning the border with Lebanon, which is totally vulnerable at this point because of the Lebanese resistance, they had to send them to defend, to stop the settlers from breaking in. This is the savagery that that our government is supporting. This is the savagery that got 52 standing ovations at our Congress. It's really disgusting. This empire is collapsing unquestionably. It doesn't mean our society has to collapse. It doesn't mean that our conscience has to collapse. It doesn't mean that our mutual aid and communities can't be actually strengthened as an alternative. We need to prepare for the worst of times, and especially when all of this has, not only has it eclipsed of the biggest danger to us as to humanity, and the biggest danger to the planet, which is global warming, it has eclipsed that issue. And if you want to talk about the death of identity politics, you have to talk about the Obama administration, which actually, that should have ended this deception of identity politics, because Obama is responsible, greatly responsible, for contributing to global warming. And we were all deceived that he's going to do something about it. Instead, not only didn't he do anything about global warming, nothing significant, not only that, but he also engaged in wars and drone warfare and increased military aid to dictators in the Middle East. And all of those, we never think of war as contributing to global warming, but war, as I would urge you to go to the website for Cost of War, to look at the figures of how war is the biggest contributor to global warming, and how much this recent war that our government has supported with billions, how much it's contributed to global warming. So not only are they not reversing or doing anything about global warming, they're actually increasing the emissions that will speed the death of our planet. And this makes the state of Israel the most dangerous entity right now on this planet, because it wants a regional war, it wants a global war, and it's doing everything it can to provoke that, because that's just merely for the survival of one politician, for the survival of a handful of right-wing white supremacists that rule that country right now, that are even within their country, they're a minority. But as long as Netanyahu delays the massacre, delays the genocide, and as long as Netanyahu has both Harris and Trump in a headlock, he will do whatever he wants. And it leaves us only with supporting the axis of resistance that's growing around the world. And it's not limited to the Middle East. I'm talking about the global South, the resistance that's growing in the global South. If you have any doubt, look at the weekly demonstrations that are happening around the world that haven't subsided yet. These are the stakes, and this is what I'll leave you with. And we'll have a listen to some of the highlights from the week now.
لك يا بهية المساكن يا زهرة المدائن يا قدس يا قدس يا قدس يا مدينة الصلاة صلي.
سقط العدل على المداخل
سقط العدل سقط العدل سقط العدل على المداخل
حين هوت مدينة القدس تراجع الحب وفي قلوب الدنيا استوطنت الحرب حين هوت مدينة القدس تراجع الحب وفي قلوب الدنيا استوطنت الحرب الطفل في المغارة
وأمه مريم وجهان يبكيان
وإنني أصلي
الغضب الصادع آدم الغضب الصادع آدم
الغضب الصادع آدم وأنا كل إيمان الغضب الصادع آدم سأمر على الأحزان
الغضب الصادع آدم
وأنا كل إيمان
الغضب الصادع
من كل طريق بجياد الرهبة وتوجه الله الغامر الغضب الساطع آت وأنا كل إيمان الغضب الساطع آت سأمر على الأحزان
الغضب الساطع آت
وأنا كل إيمان
الغضب الساطع آت
سأمر على الأحزان من كل طريق بجياد الرهبة من كل طريق أصلي سأدق على الأبواب وسأفتح هالأبواب وستغسل يا نهر الأردن وجهي بمياه قدسية وستمحو يا نهر الأردن أثار القدم الهمجية الغضب الساطع بجياد الرهبة الغضب الساطع بجياد الرهبة وسيهزم وجه القوة سيهزم وجه القوة
سيهزم وجه القوة
البيت لنا والقدس لنا البيت لنا والقدس لنا وبأيدي
entre una guerra de ocupación y una guerra de liberación, o por lo menos salir a la calle a defender lo que es tuyo, está en Palestina. ¡A la Intifada!
Oh, tiempo de imaginar. Equal Portions is delighted to join Jazz and Justice Radio, WPFW, every Monday at 1 p.m. beginning August 5th. We're talking everything food justice, interviewing folks across all sectors, and playing the hottest new DMV music with your host, Sasha Lamira.
Hey, y'all. On Equal Portions, we'll be discussing all aspects of the way we interact with food, from the problems affecting our communities to the history and the story of the food around us and the local individuals within the food community. That's Equal Portions, Mondays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW is looking for volunteers to answer phones and enter donor information during our summer membership drive beginning August 11th through August 24th. Phone volunteering is a fun way of meeting new people and possibly your favorite programmers while also supporting the station. Need community service hours? Phone volunteering is the perfect solution. Contact us at volunteers@wpfw.org. or leave a voice message at 202-588-0999, extension 1008. That's volunteers@wpfw.org or 202-588-0999, extension 1008. For additional information, WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Expansions joins WPFW Tuesday, August the 13th at 2 a.m. Hosted by veteran broadcaster Vince Brown, Expansions will feature dance music from around the world, including funk, disco, rock, and world music from the 1970s through the 1990s. Before ending the journey, we'll feature the sounds of jazz, both funky and straight ahead. Expansions will be a welcome journey for WPFW listeners every Tuesday from 2 to 5 a.m.
Albert Hedab returns to WPFW beginning Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. till 5 a.m. with Music Memories, the best of old school from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Yes, the return of Alvin Nedab on 89.3 WPFW FM, Monday, July 29th, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Brazilian music is back in its righteous place on WPFW. I'm your host, Roberto, and Berimbau airs on Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. Are you ready to take a trip from Rio Grande do Sul to Amazon and back? That's Berimbau, Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. on WPFW. Building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
African Diaspora International Film Festival and Africa World Now Project hosts the 17th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, D.C., August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center, featuring fiction and documentary films, receptions, and Q&As. ADIFF D.C. from August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Life Matters. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Shalimar, War and Too Short. Come to Bethesda Theater in the month of August. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
Education, art, health, music, politics, and all things community.
Yes!
Join me, Ambrose Lane Jr., as we uncover the issues of D.C. communities east of the river on To the East, Mondays at 5 p.m. right here on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
Dr. Theodore Watkins, the program is to your health.
Join Dr. Theodore Watkins on Mondays from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. on To Your Health, as he teaches alternative medicine to alleviate illnesses using a holistic approach, bringing important wellness treatment options to the table otherwise overlooked by health officials across a variety of medical fields. Learn how to treat yourself to your best health under the instruction of Dr. Watkins. That's 2 to 3 p.m. on WPFW 89.3 FM, serving the collective need and imagination of the community.
We're going to see you again next week.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. A pre-dawn airstrike killed Hamas's leader Ismail Haniyeh during a visit to the Iranian capital Tehran early today, according to Iran and Hamas. They blame Israel. Israel has not claimed responsibility. It comes after Haniyeh attended the inauguration of Iran's new president in Tehran, and hours after an Israeli strike in Lebanon's capital Beirut, which targeted a top Hezbollah commander, though Hezbollah has not confirmed the death. The actions escalate the tensions and fears of an all-out regional war. Iran's supreme leaders vowing revenge against Israel. Israel has vowed to kill Haniyeh and other Hamas leaders for the group's October 7th attack that sparked the war in Gaza. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken stressed the importance of a ceasefire in the Gaza war and de-escalating tensions.
We've been working from day one not only to try to get to a better place in Gaza, but also to prevent the conflict from spreading, whether it's in the north with Lebanon and Hezbollah, whether it's the Red Sea with the Houthis, whether it's Iran, Syria, Iraq, you name it. And a big key to trying to make sure that that doesn't happen and that we can move to a better place is getting the ceasefire.
Arab leaders have condemned the assassination. Egypt says the killing of Haniyeh and lack of progress in ceasefire talks is complicating the situation. Qatar said it could jeopardize ceasefire talks. Turkey said the strikes indicate Israel does not want peace. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke to reporters today and said while he had no information to give about Haniyeh's death, the U.S. would defend Israel if it's attacked, just as it did earlier this year. The United Nations Human Rights Office released a report today accusing Israel of torturing Palestinians taken from Gaza and put in secret locations in Israel and the West Bank. It says thousands were forcibly removed from Gaza, including children, women, patients, healthcare providers, journalists, and human rights defenders. Jeremy Lawrence is the UN human rights spokesperson.
Detainees say they have been held in cage-like facilities, stripped naked for prolonged periods, wearing only diapers. They tell of prolonged blindfolding, deprivation of food, sleep, and water, and being subjected to electric shocks and being burnt with cigarettes. Some detainees say dogs were released on them, and others say they were subjected to waterboarding or that their hands were tied and they were suspended from the ceiling. Some women and men also spoke of sexual and gender-based violence.
The report said Israel's prison service held more than 9,000 of these security detainees as of the end of June. It also accuses the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank of arbitrary detention and torture to suppress criticism and political opposition. Vice President Kamala Harris campaigned for president in Atlanta, Georgia, the swing state last night, and she sought to set the record straight on immigration, a Republican election year talking point, accusing the Biden administration of a border crisis. Harris hit back last night, recalling her role as California's attorney general, a border state. She compared her positions to Donald Trump's recent efforts to derail a border security bill.
Donald Trump, on the other hand, has been talking a big game about securing our border, but he does not walk the walk. He tanked the bipartisan deal because he thought it would help him win an election.